Hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to demystify death and talk about all aspects of it. And we've covered a huge number of areas so far, but this is an area today that I'm ashamed to say I didn't know anything about. It's the area of photographing newly born, stillborn babies or babies who die soon after death. And I'm with Mark Shepherd, who does this as a part-time occupation. Mark, does it take an awful lot of courage to do this?
Sometimes. It depends. When I first started doing it, I found it was very emotional. It's got easier over time. And it does depend who I'm with. So in certain cases, I feel a lot more moved than in others.
And is this something quite new? I mean, as I said, I was a bit embarrassed that I hadn't realised it was going on. Has it been going on for long?
It's relatively new. So this charity has been going for 10 years now. We've just gone through the 10-year anniversary. I've been involved for about half of that. So it is relatively new in that it is a service which has become more well-known.
And what drew you to it?
I'm a bereaved dad myself. So there wasn't much help around when we lost our boy. That was 2002. We had our first loss. And we were on dial-up internet in those days. There was no browsing the internet for help or trying to get in touch with people. I just didn't know where to look for help. And about 16 years later, our loss was on a Christmas Eve, which really distressed me. And so when Christmas comes around every year, it does hit me quite hard. And at this 16-year anniversary, I thought, I've got to do something about this. And I thought, like with yourself, you got on with doing something out of the grief. It took me 16 years, but decided that I would try to get to work somehow with bereaved dads. It's not what I do for a living. It's something I wanted to do as a volunteer. So started to become involved in the bereavement world, particularly with that. And actually, it was here in where we are today. I met with your friend and mine, Natasha Bradshaw.
Yes, we should say we're recording this in Mortlake Crematorium. They very kindly let us use the space. Unfortunately, we've chosen a day with lots of aeroplanes going overhead, but I hope they don't interfere with our conversation too much. So Natasha was her help.
Yes, we were here. Someone else had a meeting with Natasha, and he thought it would be a good idea to invite me along, a church minister who I know. So he invited me along just to meet Natasha, thinking that it may help what I was doing. And she'd never met me before, and we sat down and we were talking around this issue of bereaved dads. And out of the blue, she said, "Do you do photography?" And I said, "Yes, why?" And she told me then about Remember My Baby. And it just was one of those revelatory moments that I just knew that this was something very, very special that I ought to get involved in. So I contacted them. There's a process you have to go through so that they can make sure you are able to take the right kind of photos, specifically with a flash and indoors in a hospital situation. And I was accepted.
Is there any kind of finding out whether you're emotionally stable enough to do it?
We do a shadowing session, at least one, and I shadowed another photographer. And I remember going there and thinking, how will I feel walking into that room? And I had no idea. And I was fine after that.
And how did you feel?
Fairly neutral. I knew that I was going to be seeing things that I hadn't seen for a long time, some extraordinary things. And just seeing a baby in that state, seeing the parents, and I was fine coming out of it. I was surprisingly fine.
Did it not take you back to your own loss?
Yeah, it did. But I think it's more around, it's hard to know when and what will trigger memories. And I must say, for about the first 10 sessions that I did, I was very emotional. You know, crying in the corridors after, or and midwives having to sort of console me. So it was something to get used to. But ironically, it ended up being the very thing that I think has helped me the most in getting over my own grief.
How do you think that's happened?
I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, and I don't know the psychology behind it. But I think that meeting other parents, being able to help them in some way, for whatever reason, that has helped me, and it's helped something settle inside me.
We'll come back to you in a moment, but let's carry on talking about what happens when you go to these photographic sessions. I mean, obviously everybody's very, very distressed at that point in time. But they really want some record, do they, of the baby that they've lost?
They do, and so the request comes from the parents. The parents will speak to the bereavement midwife, will tell them about the service that we offer. They all then say that they'd like photos. The call comes to us, the session's arranged, and the photographer attends. There's a variety of ways people choose to be involved. We have three levels of consent that the parents can choose from. One is to keep the photos private, which most people tend to choose. The other is called a limited consent, which allows us to share the photos privately amongst the other photographers. We have internal training. It's the only way we can learn this kind of photography. You can't buy a book on it or watch videos on it. It's something we have to learn from one another. So we share tips and tricks online in a private group. We share images that are exemplary, that may help others. So parents can offer that level to us where we can share them privately, or they can go for the full consent, which allows the images to be used in marketing material, on the website, brochures.
To help the charity.
Exactly. There's literature that is left in the hospital so people can see examples. So that's always very helpful. To the best of my knowledge, we only use those photos a year after the photos are taken. So it does give the parents some time at least. They wouldn't see images of their baby flashing up on a website, which I think is quite wise.
And tell me the kinds of photos, the kind of pictures that you take. Are they just of the baby or baby with the parents? Or what do you do?
There's a variety, and there's a lot of improvising involved because every situation is different. Sometimes it's baby alone. So I've attended a number of those where the parents have gone home, or they've left hospital for a variety of reasons, or they don't want to be involved because they're too upset, in which case it's done in another room. When it's with the parents, we've just got to see on the day how they want to be involved. Some parents really get involved. They can't wait for the photographs to be taken. There are others who are more reluctant. And what's special about it is that because it's an arranged event, because they know the photos are going to be taken, having a cuddling shot with the baby is sometimes the first time that the dad has held the baby, because there's a reason to do it. And even when they've been reluctant before, sometimes I'll say, perhaps you could just lay your hand next to the baby, just have something of yourself in the photo. And that might lead to them saying, actually, I wouldn't mind picking it up and holding the baby. The first session I did, the baby was in ICU and they were going to remove life support. And the dad had never held his little girl. And he held her for the first time once they'd taken her out of the incubator. And once the session was over, he didn't want to let go. And he said to the nurses, he's just going to stay where he is for a while. And I think that that may not have happened in the same way had there not been that situation of taking the photos.
So I hadn't really realised that some people might be very reluctant to have anything to do with this dead baby.
Yeah, well, it's a shock. It's a real shock. People are expecting a baby to be born. It's healthy. They arrive in hospital with baby's clothes, with toys. And a few hours later, there's been a disaster, and you're left completely shocked. It's the last thing you think that'll happen to you. I know in my own case, my wife and I didn't even know whether we wanted to see the baby or not. At lunchtime, everything was fine. It was Christmas Eve. And we were asked that question. He was born at 7 o'clock that night. So there was this sort of 7 hours of complete chaos and confusion. So you don't know what to think. And so you get asked these questions. Would you like to see the baby? We just didn't know.
Did it take you a while to decide?
Well, we decided we didn't want to see the baby. We were just so shocked. And the midwife had the presence of mind to keep him in a basket in the room next door. And we ended up having some time with him, which I'm so grateful for. It would have been a regret had we not.
But it took you a while to come round to that decision, obviously.
Yeah, probably around, well, it was shortly after he was born. I suppose within half an hour, I thought, there's no way that I can't see him. And ended up spending about 45 minutes with him on my own in the room. Went through to my wife and I said, you've got to have a look. And she agreed and I wheeled him through. And very glad that we did. And so parents are going through all of that.
But you didn't have any photos taken because that was before it was done.
That wasn't offered at the time. The midwife very kindly took some photos on a Polaroid camera. And that's all we've got. I've got a handful of these Polaroids which I keep in a drawer. My wife's never seen them. And I wonder now whether she even knows whether they're in the drawer. I pull them out once a year to have a look.
On Christmas Eve?
Around that time, yeah. We had another little boy as well who was born 4 years later, who we also lost.
Oh.
And we didn't have photos of him at all. There was a bit of confusion and they ended up taking him away before we could take any photographs of him. So he lives in my memory and we've got his hands and footprints. But photographs would have been great.
So it's great, isn't it, that things have changed so much in the last 20 years for other people. You can't
it
get
is.
Your time back. But
yeah, exactly. People. I think bereavement care generally for baby loss has improved hugely. So we have bereavement suites now in hospitals, where a bereaved couple can be off the ward. It's a large room, there's a kitchenette, there's a sofa that folds out into a bed so someone can stay overnight if they need to.
Oh, nice.
There's an office attached to that so the midwife can deal with any administration and come straight through. And so the experience is a lot kinder now than it was 20 years ago.
And I've been on the website, Remember My Baby, and seen some of the photographs. And you talked about dads not necessarily wanting to hold their babies, but I've seen pictures of dads looking actually quite joyous
yes.
at holding their babies and,
yeah.
and smiling really, really deeply about having this baby.
Yes, and those are the really, those are the best photos, those ones. Going back to your question of what type of photos we take, I tend to have a few bankers which I'll take straight away, so hands and feet, baby alone in the cot, or we'll take the baby out, have them on the bed, maybe make a little nest out of some blankets, have some toys in the background. It's baby alone, and then say to the parents, would you like to be involved? So they can lie on the bed with him, they can stand and hold him or her. Individual shots. Some family shots together with cuddling. It usually just depends on how they would like the session to be and how they're feeling on the day. If I can see that they're starting to become too emotional, then we'll do a little something else. Taking shots over the shoulder just to show the profile of the face, with perhaps them cradling the baby, is a really nice sympathetic shot. Especially the moms are not in a great state. They've been through labor. They're suffering with grief. They may not look their best. And so to be very careful in the photos that we take to always show people at their best. And to the photos you're referring to, when a baby gets born, there's this instinct that comes out. Even if the baby isn't alive, there is still that joy of a newborn baby. And during a photo session, people might be crying and then just switch to smiling and even laughter at just the joy of this little life.
But I guess that doesn't always happen, does it? Some people will.
No, it doesn't always, but I think I would say it's in probably more than half of the cases. You'll get one or both of the parents smiling at some point. And that's not just smiling for the photos, they are smiling whilst looking at their baby.
So you're giving them more than an opportunity of having photographs taken, aren't you? You're giving them an opportunity to make a kind of connection.
That's turned out that way. I never expected that to be the case. But I've just seen that happen in so many cases now where there is that connection. And sometimes it's a last goodbye as well. So I'll go into a session and they'll tell me that we're doing these photos and then that's it, we're saying our goodbyes. And so it's capturing that moment, and there's a real gravitas there. There's something bigger in the whole situation. You can feel the weight of it and the responsibility to capture that moment with the parents and sometimes siblings.
Oh, I was going to come on to other relations. Yes, sometimes older siblings are there, are they, as well?
Yes, and a little trick which was shared in our private group was to take some bubbles along. Because often these kids are running around, they may not realize the gravity of the situation. And blowing some bubbles, even over the baby, and having siblings run around and trying to catch the bubbles can result in some amazing photos. There was one little girl particularly, she was probably about 11 years old, absolutely adored her little sister. And sometimes, yeah, and in this case, I almost feel like she took the responsibility of the whole session, making sure that there were some nice photos, which is unbelievable. And you can't anticipate that happening. Mm. You've just got to wait until you're in the room, see what it's like. And there's grandparents as well.
I was just going to say, do you have whole family situations sometimes?
There are. They're, you know, grandparents, uncles and aunts. We tend to ask for them to wait outside initially, just because of space. And then for anyone who would like photos after that to come in. And sometimes it is an aunt or a grandparent who sort of takes control of the situation and is the level head in the room, which can be helpful.
But for the parents, it must be wonderful to have that record, if there aren't relatives around, the record that they can then show to other people.
Yes, it depends. I don't get to see how the photos are used. We don't hear back from a lot of the parents, and the parents that I do hear back from might tell me, and they'll say they've got the specific one which is framed. And I remember all the photos. We don't just download the photos when we get back off the camera. Each one is edited from a raw format. And you'll know that from recording. You can have your raw content, which you then can edit and then compress. And so often I'm most emotional during the editing time. So I'm alone, I've got time, and I'm revisiting that situation. I'll be more emotional then than in the hospital.
Do you have to kind of protect yourself in any way before doing this and before doing the editing? Do you kind of have special ways of looking after your own emotions?
I think I've learned that with anything in life, I studied a master's in my 40s, and I found that in order to get my mind into the work, which I had to do every evening after work, it took me about an hour to change my mind from one thing to another. And so in going to a session, I know West Middlesex Hospital is one that I cover, and it's about a 45-minute walk from home. And so I'll always walk it, and it gives me 45 minutes to change my mind from whatever I've been involved in during the day into that mode of going to take photographs in a bereavement situation.
Now, you say that there's so much work, that you do this often, that there are so many babies dying, that there's a lot of work for you. I mean, that's quite shocking to come.
There
to
is.
Isn't it?
We're currently, the charity is doing around 3 sessions per day nationally.
Oh, goodness.
And that's 7 days a week. So that expands out to about 1,000 sessions a year. We're meeting 1,000 families per year at the moment.
Gosh, that just demonstrates how much we don't really talk about it, doesn't it? Because
I think so, yeah.
I don't think people are aware of the extent of the baby loss that there is.
No. So today, 3 photographers will be going out on sessions, and that's into hospitals or hospices. So we cover, it's 140 hospitals as a round number nationally and 20 hospices.
And it's obviously done something for you, hasn't it? I mean, you're not denying that, you're accepting that. It's really been helpful to you in your own bereavement journey.
Yes, very much. And I regard this as the most significant thing that I do in life. I'm a parent, so that's significant. I'm a husband.
So you went on to have other babies?
Yes, we did. Well, actually in between. So I have, for context, I do have 2 teenage daughters. One is 15 and the other is 19. So our firstborn was Christian, who died. We then had Alice, who's now 19. We then had James, who we lost at birth. And then we have Caitlin, who is 15. So with all the volunteering that I do, with the hobbies that I have, the work that I do, I work in architecture and planning. This to me is the most significant thing that I do.
Because it has such an impact on other people's lives.
I think so, yeah. It's the thing that I'm most proud to tell people about, of my contribution to the world moving forward.
It is great that things have moved on so much in the 17 years since you lost your first son, isn't it? I mean, I have seen photos of stillborn babies on places like Twitter and Instagram, which you would never have seen in the old days, which people would have kind of, I don't know what it would have been, but they probably wouldn't have even talked about it.
It seems that way. And actually, you mentioned before, we're here at Mortlake, and I was at a service here 1 year, and a very elderly man who came to speak to me afterwards, and I thought, you know, he's lived with this all his life. And it may only be now that these types of services are available where you can come in and just express that grief.
Can you take yourself back to when you lost the first son and what it was like for you when you tried to pick up the pieces and, for example, go back into work? How did other people treat you? What did you do? Did you tell anyone? That must have been horrendous.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do, and I had no reference at all. I didn't know anyone who'd lost a baby. As I say, it was on dial-up internet at the time. There was no such thing as browsing the internet. You went on mainly to download your emails or look at something very specific. And there wasn't really bereavement leave on offer. So had that loss on Christmas Eve. The office was closed between Christmas and New Year. And on the 2nd of January, I was back in the office and not ready to go back at all. It was gloomy. There were certain songs which I'd heard at the time which just really upset me, and you hear those songs again, takes you back there. And people say silly things because they don't know what to say. Colleagues, even family members, because it's new for them as well. And I was just so proud that my wife was pregnant, and we were so looking forward to this baby coming. And I used to talk about it a lot in the office, and I thought, I'm going back to this office now. I've got to break this news somehow to everyone. And because the office had been closed, there was no sort of phoning ahead to a manager or something to say, would you mind just letting everyone know before I come in?
Gosh, that must have been awful for me.
It was horrible, and I struggled probably for 6 months. I think I resigned after about 8 and went self-employed. So it ended up being one of the triggers for me leaving employment and starting my own business. And I think that the whole thing helped me with our second loss. And strangely, I know our second boy was born in December. I can never remember the date. I go and look it up, and I remember it for a minute, and it's gone. I just know that it was mid-December at some time. And so for whatever reason, my mind blocks that out. So going back to work and being in an office, I really struggled with.
What are some of the silly things people said?
A colleague, one of them came to me and said, and I explained to her, she sat next to me and she said, well, at least it wasn't a real baby yet. Because he was born early. And people saying it as a consolation. And like I say, one of the stories I used to read to my children, I've still got my little book from when I was young of Rumpelstiltskin. And the whole story starts off with this miller who is brought before the king and he doesn't know what to say. So he said the first thing that came into his head, which was, my daughter can spin straw into gold. And I think one of the morals of the story there is that don't just say whatever is in your head when you find yourself in a situation that you know nothing about. So I don't blame anybody for that. They're trying to offer some sort of consolation or some sort of wisdom in a situation which is completely foreign to them. I think the difficulty for bereaved parents is they often have to manage those situations.
They're managing their grief anyway, and then they have to manage other people's stumbling attempts too.
They are. And fortunately for the ladies, they come into work, they might be in the kitchen or at the water cooler, and someone says, oh, you haven't got your bump anymore. Did the baby get born? And they didn't know. And obviously the...
Is that what your wife experienced?
No, she didn't. This we've heard from other parents. And it's not uncommon. And then they obviously have to manage that situation and say, well, don't feel too bad. This is actually what happened. But fortunately, back to work care has improved. So when parents are on leave, management are told what's happened and colleagues are briefed. So I think that is also another area that has improved hugely.
But coming back to you to end on, you've described your journey, as they call it nowadays, and you've talked about how much this work helps you. I'm just trying to get a feeling of the way it's helped you, really.
I think the only way I can describe it is that the episodes of grief are not as severe. I heard a saying once at a service. It said that the tears of grief turn to tears of remembrance, which I liked. And I think that's what's happened with me. The tears don't go away, but there's a sting that's been taken out of it. And I think that if I can do a little something for parents, leave them with something, especially when it's a memory of something which was good. Like I say, even in extraordinary circumstances like that, there is this joy that wells up in the parents in between the grief. And if they can be reminded of the joy in that situation, then that's something positive.
Mark Shepherd, thank you so much for talking to me. And let's just mention the name of the charity again, Remember My Baby.
It's Remember My Baby, yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.